This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
Everybody, what is going on? And welcome back to another episode of Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. I am your host, Eric Rivera, and I know it's been a long time since I've done a podcast. My God, the last time, it's crazy. The last time I did a podcast was right after, I think, you know what, it's funny. I think I actually lost a little bit of desire to do a podcast. I was so disgusted. All right, you know, if we think back, this was just a couple of weeks ago. I was so disgusted by the Barcelona game, by the 0-4 or the 4-0, the 4-0 loss that we had to Barcelona. I went on that rant I had on the last podcast. So that's the last podcast you would see on my feed. I was so pissed off about it. And then eventually I just got out of it. But the funny thing is, it was like one thing after another. You know, we had Holy Week, essentially, Semana Santa. My kids were off. You know, I decided to take some time off, went on vacation. I came back, got mad sick. Then somebody in my office got COVID. Thankfully, I didn't get COVID. So a bunch of stuff happening here and there. And then it's crazy because in all this time, the tables have absolutely turned, ladies and gentlemen, Madridista fans. The tables turned. And we are now one win away, not even one win away. We are 1 point away from the 35th La Liga title. If you are listening to this podcast, I am doing it right before. It is Monday night. It is right before the day before, of course, the Manchester City-Real Madrid game that will be played at the Etihad. So I don't know if being away from the podcast has given Real Madrid a ton of luck, or if it just essentially, you know, me giving myself a break it's funny. There's a lot of stuff that you can actually talk about. You know, you can talk about Al Chiringuito and of course, Juanma Rodriguez, who I'm not that big of a fan of, but he is a Madridista, but he can be a clown sometimes. And but the funny thing is, he said, you know, one of the things he said was the Javineta, which is, of course, what they were calling this Barcelona team, which, you know, was doing phenomenal at one point. And everybody was thinking, oh, this is the best team in Europe. They've turned everything around. And my God, football is a cruel mistress, ladies and gentlemen. Football is cruel. Football is cruel. And especially if you're a Barca fan. And, you know, it's been cruel to us as Madridistas as well. Football can be cruel, and all of a sudden the Xavineta, which is, imagine yourself, a Volkswagen Pinto, an old Volkswagen, van, and essentially the wheels have come off the Xavineta, and Juanma Rodriguez said it was mucho humo, pero no arranca, which is a lot of smoke, but it doesn't start. And essentially, that's what happened to the Javineta. The wheels have come off. The engine has failed. And some people like to call it a purple patch. Some people like to call it, it's just something that happens, that we've all seen it. It's something when a team is not doing well, and a team is not doing well under a coach, and a new coach comes in, and especially a new coach that was played up like Xavi, a new coach comes in, you know, that supposedly has this ADN, this DNA that I talked about in my spiel about Real Madrid's loss in El Clásico, and you know that people were talking about this DNA and how Real Madrid has never really had a DNA. And I think the DNA that Real Madrid has had, which I think in the past remontadas that we've seen, in these last few comebacks that we've seen, these guys are absolutely the comeback kings. And that's, you know, what the name of this episode is, the comeback kings, plus the road to the 14th, to number 14. You know, it's that Real Madrid, sure, yeah, they've had a style, but it's always been that, of course, that, you know, we've seen a lot of that, you know, that counterattacking, that speed on the counterattack, very, very, how would you say, just very, very attacking football, you know, on the counter to a few passes, some quick runs from either the wingers, you know, or the middle to go out to the wingers and then work their way up the middle and, you know, either cross or pass to the middle or whatever, and then score a goal. And essentially it happens all in quick succession. That might be some of the style, but that might be some of the style we saw from the BBC era, you know, of Benzema and Bale and Ronaldo when they had that speed. And then, of course, you know, we had different styles where Zidane, of course, people were calling it the cross and Inshallah, which was basically crossing the ball in to the, into, you know, crossing the ball in and without the likes of Ronaldo hoping that somebody would get on the end of the cross, which for Zidane was the likes of Casemiro, was the likes of Sergio Ramos, and we were able to score that way. And then this season, it's been just, you know, it's been an entire, I don't even know how he would classify the tactics under Ancelotti. He's been one of the most hated men to, I think, in a lot of ways, one of the most loved men, you know. I think people have confidence in him or they don't have confidence in him. Now, whatever you want to say about us moving forward, that's one thing. But I think the DNA of this team, going back to the whole idea of DNA, aside from like what Xavi and Barcelona always want to talk about, is this DNA of the Cruyffismo and of the tiki-taka, and that we have to play a style and we have to be pretty. And that's the way we'd rather play a pretty game and lose it than, you know, play an ugly game and win it, which is terrible at the end of the day, because honestly, I think the DNA from Real Madrid is winning, however it may be. Sometimes you have to play gritty and ugly football to win a game, because it might be that that's what the opponent is allowing you to do. They're only allowing you to do certain things. They're playing some really, let's say, dirty, I don't know if you want to call it dirty, they want to, you know, you want to call it anti-football. They're playing very defensively, they're playing low block, they're playing an Atletico Madrid style where they have two lines of five and just one person there. You know, basically they just have two lines of five people defending, no forwards whatsoever. I mean, whatever you want to call it, but sometimes those games happen. And sometimes those games where you have to play gritty, ugly football and come away with a win are necessary, and they are the necessary games you need to win a title. Not every single game is going to be an absolute, delight for the senses. It's not going to be an absolute beautiful game. It's not going to be, we call this the beautiful game, but it's not always the beautiful game. Some teams' tactics will be to play defensively because they have to, because they feel that they are outgunned. They are outgunned when it comes to attacking football, and they need to lay back and try to score on the counter. They need to wait for a mistake. And listen, guys, that's a strategy. I don't hate on teams that do that. You know, I think a lot of times people want to be entertained, and they want to be entertained. But at the end of the day, as much as you might want to be entertained in football, the team, let's look at the bottom line. You know, it sucks that things come down to money, but a lot of times that's the real deal. That's the world we live in. You know, Elon Musk just bought Twitter for $45 billion. At the end, it comes down to money. It doesn't have to do with freedom of speech. It doesn't have to do with any of that crap that you want to shovel. All it, at the end of the day, it's all about is cash money and how can I put money in my pocket. And if you're lucky enough to be one of those guys who has tons of money, then you invest in different things to see if you can, how far you can take your money and how much you can build. I think a lot of times I'm getting into a political thing here, but a lot of times these billionaires just want more money. But the thing, like, if you think about it with Real Madrid and you think it from a sporting perspective, with a team like Real Madrid, you want to go to, maybe it's that billionaire mentality, or maybe it's just that success mentality. It's where if you have already won all these titles, in this case with sports, it's like, yeah, we've won all these titles, but the fan base is so demanding. So they just want more and more and more and more and more titles. So much so that the identity of this team is that you always have to win and you have to play to win and fight at all costs. And at the end of the day, it's also a business. So Real Madrid and the people that are up there, Florentino and the board, all these guys that are up there, all these people that have a vested interest in seeing Real Madrid succeed, because Real Madrid's success means dollars in their pocket or euros in their pocket. You think they really care if Real Madrid is playing beautiful football or if Real Madrid wins? You know, because at the end of the day, what gives you the money is the win, right? What gets you the accolades, what gets you the trophies, and then what gets you the checks and the bags is the win. And it sucks to say that, but that's sometimes the reality of the situation. Now, for the fan, it might not be the greatest thing because, yes, you don't want to see boring games or unentertaining games, but fans are also sometimes delighted by the fact that their team wins. Now, some people call it resultadista, where you're only looking at the results and you're not looking at the play. And the thing is, there's so many different things. There's so many takes that I see on Twitter, you know, and from Madridistas about essentially, you know, it's become strange. There's agendas because you like a certain player, and if they don't play that player, then you get offended. It's so crazy that happens, but it does. So there are people who just, or they might have an agenda against Ancelotti. I mean, I saw people on Twitter, I saw Madridistas talking about that they would rather prefer for Real Madrid not to win the league title and not to win the Champions League just because they don't like Ancelotti and they want him out. And that is a loser mentality. That is a loser mentality, because you always want to win, no matter how tough it is, no matter how hard it is, no matter how ugly it is, you want to win. If you don't want to win, you're in the wrong sport. Because I guarantee you that if Everton could have gotten all these gritty wins, could have won the league title with Carlo Ancelotti at the helm, playing some really ugly, sometimes just insane Carlo ball that makes no sense whatsoever, that we don't know what he's trying to do, and he makes these mistakes, and he puts Luka Modric as a number nine, and you know, and he makes these mistakes, but at the end of the day, he would win La Liga or he would win the Premier, let's say, with Everton. People would take that win. I'm sure Everton fans would take that win, as ugly as it is. And you see the situation they're in now. They were better under Ancelotti than they are under, who is it, Gerrard? I don't know. Was it Gerrard or Lampard? Who's coaching them right now? I don't know. I forgot. But anyway, I think it's one of the two guys. So the thing is, yeah, I definitely think sometimes these gritty wins are important. And then at the same time, the style is you got to do whatever it takes to win. And he's been, and for Ancelotti, on the question of Ancelotti, I think he's been going through, I think it's been strange. I think he's finding the right, he's finding the things that a lot of us already knew was going to happen. Injecting Valverde into the middle three, that, you know, Kroos, Casemiro, and Modric have been slowing down, and essentially you need somebody to be doing the pressing, to be tracking back, because at the same time, somebody with a gas tank like Valverde, who's going to press, who's going to track back, leaves the opportunities open for Modric and Kroos to slow down the play of the ball, to slow down the play, to do what they can do, to control the tempo, for Toni Kroos to control the tempo, like he did against Chelsea, which in the first leg, which was he was sitting there in the back, in front of the defenders, and he was the one really essentially directing the play out of the back, and it reaped rewards for us, and that's how we got the win. Now, it didn't exactly help us in the second leg, but at the same time, it was because of the fact that in the second leg, obviously, Tuchel was going to do different things and change up different things, and he brought in Timo Werner, who's definitely speed was an issue, and then Reece James had a phenomenal game, and he took out Christensen, and he put in Reece James to take care of Vinicius, so it was harder for Vinicius to get into the game. But Those tactical, I mean, I was expecting, and I was speaking on the Madridista Roundabout podcast, which was the last podcast I did, really, which was right before the second Chelsea game, where we were, of course, looking at, you know, how were we going to, how was Tuchel going to respond? Was Chelsea going to be the same team that we played in the first leg? And of course they weren't. You know, they played a different game. And the thing is, it's the adjustment of tactics, and it's who's going to get the one up on the other. And so, like I said, the tables have turned. Things have gone from where we thought it was terrible to now things just seeming like we can beat anybody, where there's just magic in the Bernabeu. There's magic in this club, where we feel we can beat anybody. And I think we can definitely beat Man City. I'm not saying, and this is, you know, obviously this is before the game, I'm not saying that it's going to be easy. I'm not saying that but Man City has not been looking the best, especially in that second leg that they had against Atletico. They did not look like the same team. They played defensively. Pep Guardiola played defensively against Atletico, and against Atletico, who hasn't been playing the best football, and they were only able to hold on to that one, you know, to that 1-0 lead that they had. They were able to get in the Etihad. Now, what do I expect against Real Madrid? I think it's going to be tough, but I think Real Madrid, I think Ancelotti is going to play a little bit more defensively. I think he's going to take a page a little bit out of the, you know, the Catenaccio, out of his Serie A and his Italian style, and he's going to try and play a lot more defensively against Pep Guardiola, because if you go at Man City, you leave spaces open for, you know, the speed and the play that Man City has and is able to capitalize on. But what they don't have is, right now, they don't have a striker that is really, I would say, scoring goals left and right. As a unit, they score goals, but they don't have a striker like a Karim Benzema. They don't have that somebody who's holding up play, who's helping them out with that. In that regard, who is that definite number nine that has been in form and just banging goals in? Defensively, I think they have the same issues as we do. I think it's going to be tough there. It's going to, because we've been sort of leaking goals at the back, with the likes of, I mean, Militao sometimes has been playing well, but then he's been making mistakes. He made big mistakes in the game against Sevilla, when then we were able to get back into the game. You know, there's a lot of different things that, and I don't really want to talk about tactics so much, in this game. It's just that I just wanted to talk about all the things that have been going on since, you know, we started, since, you know, the last time I had a podcast. And the last time I had a podcast was that Barcelona game, and the things have changed. You know, we had that remontada against Chelsea. We had that phenomenal game against Chelsea. And then I was on the Madridista Roundabout podcast. And then after that, we had the remontada against Chelsea. Then we had a remontada against Sevilla. Then we played Osasuna. Then we played Osasuna. You know, so we've had all these games where we have looked legitimately, now where we are kind of back into playing well. And I really think that at this point, it seems like Real Madrid, if they are on their game, can beat anyone. I'm actually a little bit more, I would say I'm kind of worried about Liverpool. I think Liverpool has coming towards the end of the season in the Premier League and in the Champions League is looking like the stronger team. Although, well, they got three goals scored against them when they played Benfica, but they weren't playing all of their star players. They did, you know, pretty much take out some of their guys in order to conserve them and for, you know, what was it? I think it was the FA Cup that they were going to play against Man City. So honestly, I think Liverpool is going to be a tough team. Which I do see them. I don't know. I mean, because Villarreal has been surprising everybody. Do I see them going through? I don't know. I think Villarreal is a surprising package. I think Unai Emery is a seems like he's a brilliant coach when it comes to managing these European ties. So we'll have to see what happens there. But I do feel like Liverpool can be the favorite to go through. I do think they will go through. And then at the end, I think Real Madrid is the one. I mean, I don't like to make predictions. I think it's going to be another nail biter for us as Madridistas. I do hope we go through. I think we can go through. I think we can. I think the magic is on our side. I think the momentum is on our side. You know, I honestly feel that Benzema is in stellar form. Valverde is in stellar form. Modric is in stellar form. I think the only issues we really have currently, obviously, are our back line. We have to see that hopefully Militao is kind of gets back into the swing of things and has these, you know, monumental games that he's had in the past and kind of repeats that right now, because we can ill afford any screw-ups against Man City. You know, Vinicius, of course, is a solid, solid player, and he's been doing phenomenal. I think Rodrigo, my God, I think Rodrigo is once again coming into his own. The other day when he played against Osasuna, oh my God, I just almost like burped on this podcast. When Rodrigo played the other day against Osasuna, there were times in that game where I thought that I was watching Vinicius. The speed, the dribbling, the intent. And this is because he was playing on what we all know is sort of his, you know, is, I guess, what, his favorite left side. But he's had to play right wing for Real Madrid. He's been looking phenomenal. Honestly, he's been looking phenomenal. Now, obviously, if Mbappe comes, then, you know, which it seems like he will. Obviously, that saga is drawing out longer than I think many of us Madridistas would like. We wish it would go faster, and it hasn't yet. I don't know why, because at this point, PSG isn't playing for anything anymore. I don't think Mbappe would piss anybody off if he were to announce that he's leaving. So who knows what's going to happen there. But anyway, I think Rodrigo is going to be the loser, unfortunately, if Mbappe does arrive. He is going to be sort of relegated to being a backup, you know, of course, because I think we're going to be playing with a front three of Mbappe, Vinicius, and Benzema. And we'll have to wait and see how that's going to work out. But I think Rodrigo has definitely, I mean, he's obviously taken away that position from Asensio. I think Asensio at this point is done with Real Madrid. Honestly, I don't like talking shit about players. You guys know that if you've listened to this podcast, but I think Asensio at this point, his time is over at Real Madrid. He's too inconsistent. Yes, he can score some bangers with his left foot, but at this point, if that's all you can bring to the table, that's not enough. And I think he's going to be moving on. So I'm really happy from what I'm seeing from Rodrigo. So I think, I mean, if we can use him against Man City, I think that'll be a great, I think he will be a great asset. I think we can use him against Man City. I think he can do well against Man City. He plays very well defensively as well. I think it is a good opportunity to play Rodrigo and Vini and Benzema. I don't know if we're going to probably – we might actually. I think if Ancelotti is going to play this game a little bit more defensively, then I'm thinking he may actually go – for Valverde as a right winger, like he's been using him in the past or in the last few months. I'm sorry, in the last few games, he's been kind of putting him out there as that and leaving Casemiro, Modric, and Toni Kroos to do their business in the midfield. We'll see what happens, but it's really interesting. And then Camavinga has been looking solid, of course. I think he's a little reckless with his tackles. I think he's just young and he's just full of energy. He's full of passion. I think that's going to come with time, but I think he's so elegant on the ball. I like how he plays. You know, he doesn't, I like a lot of times he doesn't, other than the fouls, he doesn't make silly mistakes when he's in possession of the ball. He makes mistakes when he's going after the tackles, but I think he's just so elegant on the ball. His passes, I mean, that pass, I forgot what it was, but it was over the top. I believe it was a pass to Rodrigo. And I believe it was against Osasuna. I might be wrong because I don't have it in front of me. But, you know, he's been playing some phenomenal football as well. And I can't wait to see what the future brings for these guys. But the nervousness, and you can tell I'm a little bit nervous. I'm going through a bunch of different things right now. But and it's been a while because I've talked to you guys since what? Since it's been like four games since the last time I spoke with everybody. But yeah, I mean, I honestly, I'm nervous for this game against Man City. I think a lot of people are concerned right now, of course, about all of the signings that are happening right now. You know, as of the moment that as of this recording, of course, it seems like everything is pointing in the direction that Rudiger is going to be coming to Real Madrid from Chelsea. It seems like that is almost locked in. Fabrizio Romano had said it. There's a couple of other people that have put it almost pretty much set in stone that he will be arriving as a free agent. So that is other good news. That is that other backup center back, another quality center back that we definitely need. Well, does that mean that Alaba moves to the to the left back position? I don't know, but it will, I think, is a good thing because it will light a fire under Mendy. So we'll see how that goes. But we still have to solve the right back issue. We got Vinicius Tobias from Shakhtar Donetsk. We have to see how that's going to play out. I mean, what is he going to bring to the table? Is he going to be a challenge for Dani Carvajal? It's good at least that we're getting another right back, but it remains to be seen what level this kid is going to bring. I think, you know, it remains to be seen what's going to happen with him. But some good things there. I don't know where things are with Tchouaméni. As I was reading, there was a report today that said supposedly that Real Madrid are happy with the likes of Camavinga and Valverde and are not looking for any other people in the midfield. We've seen that lately that might not be exactly true. It seems like they were happy with the center backs that they had and they decided to go after Rudiger. So at this point, it could be that we might go after Tchouaméni. It seems like the conversations were going in a good direction. Obviously, I think Haaland is done and dusted. I know we know that the issues have been with his injuries and not disclosing injuries. And then also the issue of not wanting to get an MRI or something like that. So there's been all these little things. And then, of course, you know, the cost of him and Raiola. And I don't – it's funny because as much as I like Haaland and I really want him to come – and I would really like him to play for Real Madrid, I'm saying. He wasn't the guy that I felt was the absolutely necessary one. I think all of us have been obsessed with getting Mbappé. I think Mbappé is the one that we really want. I think he's the one that's going to slot in perfectly also because of the fact that we have the likes of Benzema right now. You know, who knows what's going to happen with our backup strikers? I mean, is Jovic going to leave? Is Mariano finally going to leave? What's going to happen with these guys? Who's going to be the backup striker for Benzema? But we'll see what happens. But in this case, I mean, honestly, I think you can also play Mbappe as a backup striker and then leave, you know, have Rodrigo on the right and Vinicius on the left, and you can play that front three. Who knows? I mean, it's not ideal, but it's not a crazy idea either. I mean, the opportunities of Mbappe on the team is just insane. You're getting, who is without a doubt the top player right now in the world. So I think we all want him. And I mean, having him in Haaland would be, of course, a pipe dream, would be, of course, something insane to have. But at this point, it seems like Haaland is definitely a lock for Man City, which will make these guys even stronger next season. So hopefully we can take care of them this season and go for that final and play who I will think is going to be Liverpool, who happens to be another team that I do like. It's the only other team I follow. It's the team that I follow in the Premier League. But of course, if the final would come down to Liverpool and Real Madrid, I want Real Madrid, of course, to win. I would not be happy. It would hurt less to lose to Liverpool, but it would still be painful and I would still be sad because at the end of the day, Madrid is the team that I follow. And it is the team that I am passionate about. The fact that the other team sort of is, I'm okay with, is not going to make me feel any better, because the number one team in my book is Real Madrid. So that is the team that I would want to win. But first, we need to get through Man City. And we'll see what happens, because Man City is, I want to beat them for a couple different reasons, because I want to beat them because I don't like Man City. I don't like the, of course, it would be a beautiful thing to go through, as much as I've talked about all these, you know, about business and money being, and I don't like these money clubs. You know, I understand that it's a business, but I'm not the type of person that is going to be, you know, standing or simping for millionaires. That's not my, or billionaires. These people don't give a shit about you or I or anything like that. They just give a shit about the bottom line. So at the end of the day, and they don't care about football and they don't care about the fans. It's really about putting money in their pockets. So these billionaire clubs, like in oil money clubs and state run clubs, like the likes of Chelsea was with under Roman Abramovich, and PSG with the Qataris, and of course now Man City with the Emirates. You know, I would love for Real Madrid to stick it to those state-run clubs and come out the other end. Of course, Real Madrid is a team that has a lot of money as well and has a billionaire as the president, but it's not a, you know, it is not a club that, you know, states are just pumping money in and oil money in. So I would love to see them defeat that big three, Chelsea, Man City, and PSG. And who knows what the excuses from Culés would be if we beat them. Is it going to be, oh, there was injuries, they've been tired from a tough season, you know, all sorts of stuff. Because for Chelsea, it was that they were going through a rough time, a rough patch because of the Abramovich sanctions and everything like that. And then PSG, because they're a team, you know, once we beat them, it was because they're not really a team. They are completely, don't have chemistry. There's always an excuse. When Real Madrid beats a team, the team always has to be, It's always because the team, something happened to that team. Something happened in the dressing room. Something otherworldly happened to what once was the favorite team. And after Real Madrid beats them, it's because that team wasn't shit. But when Eintracht played Barcelona in the Europa League, all of a sudden you have Culés, like, you know, this dork, which is J. Jordi on El Chiringuito, saying things like Eintracht Frankfurt is better than Chelsea, simply because they gave them a hard time. They gave them a hard time in Frankfurt, and then they gave them a hard time in Frankfurt Part Deux, which was the Camp Nou. So, and then, you know, eventually eliminated them to the song of 30,000 German fans in the Camp Nou. And then it's like, who let them in and who let all these people in? And now it's not the grass. It's the fact that you had German fans. You know, it's always some sort of crazy excuse with Barcelona. And I love bantering with them because they're just, I love bantering because, you know, I hate them when it comes to football. You know, I'll sit down and have a beer with Barcelona fans and watch a game with them, even if Real Madrid loses. But, you know, I've had plenty of those times where I've had to swallow my pride and, you know, sit there and take it from Barcelona fans. But this is our time to shine, and this is our time to gloat. This is their failure right now. So I'm happy that that's what's happening. And it's funny to see, because somebody who I do not like, which is Xavi, it's funny to see him just come up with excuse after excuse after excuse, and for Madrid, for Culés to come up with excuse after excuse, whether it was the pitch, whether it was the 30,000 German fans that your own fans sold tickets to, you know, it's insane. You know, it's the refs. Even though in the last game, which they played against Rayo Vallecano, the refs gave them 11 minutes at the end of the game. And you know, it's the refs and the no calls or here's the thing about the reffing. And that's something that I kind of wanted to talk about. The reffing in La Liga is absolute garbage. Okay, and this is coming from a Madridista, and it doesn't matter if you're culé, a Madridista, if you go for Atleti, if you're a Betico, who, congratulations, of course, to the Betis fans. I definitely think they deserve the Copa del Rey, and I hope they actually, you know, can pull out these next couple of wins and do well so that they can hopefully, you know, kick Barcelona out of the Champions League spots, but we'll see what happens. But it doesn't matter, you know, I think, you know, because talking about the Copa del Rey, I think there was a clear penalty that in the Copa del Rey that they didn't give to Betis. There was a clear penalty, and then there was something else that happened that I was just like, what the hell just happened? Oh my God. Can't remember it. I watched the game and I was like incensed about it. Was it an offside call? I forgot what it was, but oh no, it was, it was a penalty that they didn't give him, and then something else happened. And then it was a red card that should have been given to, I believe it was a second yellow that should have been given to one of the players from Valencia. That didn't happen. It was an absolutely clear yellow card, second yellow. Guillamón is, I think, who it was. But anyway, so the reffing in La Liga has been atrocious all season long. And the VAR, forget the VAR, man. The VAR, the usage of the VAR, I like the idea of the VAR. I think plays should be reviewed, especially if they were scored and you have a player that was in the offside position, if there was a foul, you know, all that kind of stuff, VAR should definitely step in. But the way that it is used in La Liga is fully corrupt. And then with everything that's come out with Piqué and Rubiales and all the stuff that's going on there with, you know, the conflicts of interest within there, it's understandable why all these things are happening. But the thing is, Barcelona can't complain about that the refs are against them because I think it's, and honestly, I don't think, and I don't like as a Madridista to complain about calls going against us in La Liga either, because the fact is the calls are atrocious across the board. La Liga's refs are by far the worst refs, and they might not even be bad refs, but there's definitely something going on behind the scenes that's greasing the wheels of this league and getting or telling them not to call certain things or whatever, because it's absolutely atrocious. And then VAR is used like whenever they want to use it, that's when they use it. There's just no, how would I say? There is no sort of, I don't know. I don't even know how to say it. I think there's just, there's no organization. There is no consistency. There is no, it's not even like, you know, it's one day we're going to call this a foul, and then one day it's not a foul. One day we're going to interject, VAR is going to be able to review the play, and then another day VAR is not going to review the play. It's just insanity all across the board, and La Liga has to do something about it. I love La Liga. I love watching it. I will defend it because I love the teams. I love Real Madrid. I'm happy for Betis. I like watching, you know, even these smaller clubs. Smaller clubs do you know, have good runs and things like that. You know, I like seeing La Liga. I enjoy watching La Liga, but they have to get a handle on the ref situation because it is absolutely the worst thing. It is so corrupt and just completely bullshit. And it has to be with Tebas and Rubiales and all these people that are sticking their hands in there. And then not even to mention all the stuff going on with the Supercopa being in Saudi Arabia and whatever. It's fine. I get it. You want other people to see your product. But if there's a conflict of interest where money is going into your pocket because you're selling it to other people, and then it makes no sense. And if it's Supercopa de España, that's what it's called, España, which means the Super Cup of Spain, it makes no sense. Even if there's fans from all over the world that want to see them play, the reason that it is the Super Cup of Spain is because it is the Spanish league. They should be playing it in Spain. Because at the end of the day, the people that have the rights to watch those games are the people that live in those communities. You know, that is something that if we're going to talk about it being for the fans, that is what should be respected. You know, and it's like, it's all this money going in. And once again, like I said, people who stand for these billionaires and like, it's a business and stuff. Yeah, I do get it. I understand making money and wanting to make money for your team and making sure that your team does its best so it goes to all the biggest competitions and whatnot. But these deals where you're really selling the soul of your team and you're selling the soul of your league in order to make money and behind the guise that it's for the fans, sure, the fans in Saudi Arabia, I'm sure, are incredibly happy to watch Real Madrid and Barcelona and all these teams because these are, well, not really Real Madrid and Barcelona and all these teams. It's Real Madrid and Barcelona because, I mean, if I really doubt, I don't know how many Saudi Arabian Betis fans there are, you know, if they go to, if they make it to the Supercopa next year, which I think they are, you know, because they won Copa del Rey. So it's really strange to me of what's going to happen, but that, you know, that it's really just a play by the bigger clubs that are making money to make more money. And it's really, it's not something that, that I agree with. I think you can ethically, I think you can make millions ethically and make millions by not being a piece of shit, you know? And, that's unfortunate. Like that's what's happening in our sport. You know, in our sport, there's just millionaires that really don't care about the team that they even own. They just see it as almost a toy to make some money, to make some extra cash on the side. Think of it as, you know, you doing some sort of side YouTube project on the side to make some money out of your day job, which is kind of like what I try to do with Nada Más, you know, you, that's your side project, but that's like for them, that's what these, some of these clubs are for them. It's like a side YouTube project. It's like a side hustle, you know, it's like a lemonade stand, you know, something to make a little bit of extra money, you know, aside from your day job. But the thing is these, a lot of these clubs have history, you know, they have history. I mean, and I'm talking with the likes of like, even though I know Valencia, they don't particularly like Madridistas, but I feel bad for those type of teams that are, you know, have an owner that cares nothing about the team whatsoever. You know, that anytime there's a pretty good player, they sell him off because he's a valuable asset and they just want to make money. They have no care of the history of the team. They have no care of the fans and of the people that grew up watching that team. And it's funny because it's owned by some guy who's not even in the country. He's far off somewhere, has no idea about the culture, has no idea about the history. You know, these types of things, I think there's a traditional sense to it. Like, I understand if, you know, if I was a billionaire, and I hope one day to be, you know, I would love to buy a team. I would love to buy a team and, you know, buy a team and really get ingrained in the culture of the team, you know, go to every game, be there with the fans, learn from the fans, understand what they want from their team. Obviously they want to win, but what do they want to see with their team? What do I want to see in their stadiums? Do they want lower prices on their tickets so they can watch the games? Is there a way to go around that and just, you know, foment and keep that culture alive, even if it's a small team? And hopefully, like, I mean, maybe it's, you know, I think it's all of us as football fans, I think have this dream. And I think if you've ever played FIFA as a kid, you want to grab some small club from a third division or a fourth division or second division, whatever, and get them and you know, and get them and manage them little by little to go through all the seasons and go to the top and essentially win a Premier League title, a Serie A title, a La Liga title. You know, I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think what's happening is that these people that buy these teams, rarely are they invested in the culture. Rarely are they invested in the, you know, in the feeling, in the tradition. But anyway, I went off on a tangent there because of the, because of what I felt about, you know, Supercopa. And then of course, you know, Real Madrid going up against these oil money clubs, you know, and Real Madrid is, and one of the things that's so great about Real Madrid, going back to Real Madrid and to finish off this podcast that has been the first podcast I've had in a couple of weeks now, and to hopefully go into tomorrow's Manchester City game with a smile on our faces. If it's one thing, is that Real Madrid, with all the money that it might have and all the investment and all the sponsorship deals and whatever and the money that it makes, the great thing about Madrid is it still has its tradition. It still has its, you know, it still has its history. It's something that we all love about it. And its history is also ingrained in the fact that it is a winning club. And that it is I don't know. It's not about style. See, the thing about the thing about Madrid, and that I think is for me what identifies Madrid, is people like Luka Modric. It's people like Karim Benzema. It's people like Federico Valverde, who's actually a young kid and is on the team. You know, it's like guys like David Alaba, you know. It's the fact that they play for the team, but they understand what it means to be at Madrid. They understand. Maybe it's something. I always like to talk about these intangibles. It's the pomp and circumstance. It's you know, the pageantry that comes with Real Madrid. You know, the fact that this team has existed for over 100 years. You know, that it's been winning since the beginning. You know. And whatever, if you want to say that some have been controversial, whatnot, there's controversy in everything. But that they've won, that they have a history of winning, that they have a history of insane wins and comebacks and players, you know, that, you know, you have the likes of Di Stefano and Puskas, and you have La Quinta del Buitre, you know, you have the players that have revolutionized the club. You know, whether, you know, with, you know, of course, going back to like Di Stefano and Gento, Santillan, you know, all these guys, dude, like all these things that were part of the history. Cristiano Ronaldo, Raul, Roberto Carlos, Ronaldo. Like I said, once again, La Quinta del Buitre, Butragueño, Michel, all these guys that played for the team, you know, and have brought it to greatness at some point. Whether it was greatness in the domestic league or it was greatness in Europe, there's been a lot of involvement. And these guys understand that, and seeing the passion in each one of these comebacks that we've seen this season, of that's what Madrid is. It's no, we're not going to give up. We're not going to give up. This is Real Madrid. We're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting. I don't care, Luka Modric. I don't care if I'm 36, 37 years old. I'm going to keep fighting and keep grinding until I absolutely, you know, can't take it anymore, until I collapse on the field. Valverde, I'm going to run myself ragged. I'm going to grit my teeth and grind and put my head down and run after every single ball, even if it's in the 110th minute of the game, you know. You know, Alaba, you know, picking up the chair, whatever it is, like this, these crazy things we've seen, this passion. That is what Real Madrid is. And that is the legacy that Real Madrid looks for. I think that is what Florentino and the board and the people that are looking, they want to know when somebody is Real Madrid caliber, it's not that you're just a good player. You're a good player, but you want to be here. You want to be at Real Madrid. You want to be at Real Madrid more than you want to be at any other club in the world. You know, and it's not about a paycheck for you. It's about you want to be at this team, and you understand the responsibility that comes with being on this team. And that, to me, is the legacy that Real Madrid leaves. And that's what I love to see from its players. And that's what Madridistas love to see from players. That's why, you know, people love Marcelo. And that's why people sort of hate on Bale, because Bale, you know, with all the greatness that he did bring, which I'm not going to take that away from him, did maybe not have that feeling of what it takes to be a Madridista. That, yeah, unfortunately, this is a team, this is a fan base that is very, very, very demanding, that any little mistake you make, they're going to come after you, and that you got to kind of, you know, sort of watch what you do and watch what you say, because they will come after you. They will come down on you, that because you need to represent in all aspects of your life that Madrid mentality. Some people are cut out for it. Some people are not. It's tough for some. It's not tough for others. Some people just completely understand what it is to wear the Real Madrid crest, and others don't. And I think at the end of the day, Madridistas will be very permissive, are actually permissive of some faults in your game if they see that your heart is 100% with the team at all times. It's the reason why guys like Nacho and guys like Lucas Vazquez, with all their faults sometimes in the game, are not hated you know, by the Madridista, by the Madridista fan base. It's the reason guys like Marcelo, even because even if his form has gone down, even if he's no longer the Marcelo of old, will always be respected, because at the same time he sits on the bench, understanding that his time might be coming to an end, but yet he still loves the team with a passion. It's almost as if they are just as big fans. They are just as big of fans of Real Madrid as we are, as being players, as we are as being fans. And that's what Real Madrid, for me, the legacy, that's what Real Madrid means. That's what their legacy is. That's what their DNA is. That is what they look for in their players. That's what we want to see. And it translates to results, because these guys will not give up, because we know that if players think like that, if they think that way, if they believe in the team that way, they will always give their best for the team. And that's what we're seeing. And that's why I feel like we can win against Man City. Is it going to be tough? Yes. Is it going to be tough because Pep Guardiola is at the helm? And as much as I don't want Pep Guardiola to win, he is a very good coach. And I've, you know, but that is what we're up against. We're up against a quality side, quality players, quality team, lots of money at their disposal. But we have those intangibles. So, yeah. That's my story, I guess, and that's what I'm sticking to. But, yeah, I mean, tomorrow is the game against Man City, guys. This weekend we play Espanyol, and if we beat Espanyol, or if we not beat them, if we even get a draw against them, we will be holding the 35th La Liga title. And Carlo Ancelotti will be the first coach to have won a league in all of the top five European leagues. So more power to him. And I understand people don't like him or wanted him to go. But if he can, you know, check his ego at the door sometimes and not be as stubborn, I think he is a solid coach when he wants to be. If he doesn't tinker with things, if he allows himself to be, you know, to rotate players and integrate the youth and not be so focused on one set of players that are aging, he can be fantastic. And obviously, it seems like the players play out of their skin for the guy. So, and there is a reason why he's won so much in his time. So, with that said, guys, good luck to Real Madrid tomorrow. If you are listening today, right now, good luck to Real Madrid today. And that's it, guys. A la Madrid y nada más. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you guys again soon. Oh, obviously, I didn't do any social media stuff, so make sure you check out Y Nada Más at YNM Podcast on Instagram, at Y Nada Más Podcast on Facebook and Twitter, and you can check out our website, which is ynadamas.net. You can see the articles from my good friend Trombach, my good friend Halaluddin. They are writing for us on this channel, on the website. And then, of course, you can catch us on the YouTube channel here at Y Nada Más on YouTube. And, of course, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, whether it's iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you want, we are there. And we will be back this weekend, or even after the game. Actually, we'll be back this weekend after we win the 35th title, and we talk about hopefully what will be the win against Man City tomorrow. So thank you again for listening, guys. Thank you again for your support, and a la Madrid.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid Podcast.